Welcome back, everybody, to the Stark Wars podcast, where we talk all things Star Wars, Marvel, and everything in between. Please take a moment to check the show notes to find our social media, merch, and more. Today, we are recapping Last of Us Episode 9 of Season 1, Look for the Light, in full spoiler details. So if you haven't seen the episode, get out of here. Go. Just go back on a journey, then come back to us over here. Because we're hanging out talking about this episode, and I am not alone. You see, I am with the person that I would go into a hospital and destroy a lot of people, like a lot of people. But just to save you in my arms, I'd carry you in my arms. It is my co-host, Michael.
Tommy, if you were a nurse, I would spare you any day. But only if you're a nurse, of course.
Yeah, only. I do love that they kept that detail. We'll talk about it, but I love that was kept in there. It's good to see you. Welcome back to the last episode. We did it. We've done our journey together.
I'm so glad we did this, Tommy. This was such a good choice to ditch Bad Batch and talk about The Last of Us, because I don't want to get in my takes too much, especially before introducing our guest here, but I mean, my God, like one of the greatest TV shows of all time. Sorry, saying it now.
Yeah. Unlike the decisive the controversial decision that Joel makes at the end, I think no one would think our decision to get rid of doing a Bad Batch was a bad decision. But you're right. Unlike Joel and Ellie, we were not just a duo on this journey. We did have a third to our trio, Jen.
Hey, good to see everyone again. I'm really happy to be back. I was not at the hospital. I was hanging out with Tommy and all the horses and everything for most of the journey.
Good call, probably. Honestly, in hindsight, yeah.
Oh, but you missed out on Boggle and some beefaroni on our trip, so.
We're going to find a guitar.
I'm really terrible at Boggle, so.
We were saying before, I don't think I've ever actually played Boggle.
I will say
like Scrabble, but a little different.
Jen, I don't know if you're familiar with this. I know Tommy is. I talked about it, and I'm going to put it out to the audience as well. There's a Boggle-like game on Game Pigeon, which is like an iPhone thing. So if you're out there listening and you want to challenge me to a knockoff Boggle, bring it on.
Should we get Boggle to sponsor us? We'll get the knockoff Boggle.
I think we should. I think we should all play and then post our scores.
Well, Boggle aside, this is the end. I just want to, at front, like, Jen, we'll start with you. What was your feelings on this episode overall? And just, you know, at the end, we'll go over, like, the season as a whole. But what was your feelings?
I thought it was a really good episode. I was quite close to tears for most of it. It was definitely one of the heavier episodes, for sure. And I kind of like the switching of roles a bit with Grumpy Sunshine. So yeah, I had a great time.
Yeah, I mean, Joel basically, like, I agree with you on the role reversal there. Joel basically becoming the other, like, just interact with me, please.
Yeah.
Michael, what about you?
Listen, it's weird because, like, this was, it was basically, aside from a flashback, shot for shot what I played in the video game. So I feel like I've gone through this before, but there were a couple moments where it almost felt like it was being presented to me through a different lens. Whereas like it's much more like emotionally detached. I think there's a lot of the action in this episode is played like very, not necessarily somber, not necessarily exciting or violent. It's just happening. And, like, I feel like that's kind of how I feel about the episode. And I was there, too. Like, there are a lot of points in this show where I had teared up. But here I was just, like, completely, like, withdrawn of emotion. And I feel like I was similar to Joel in that way. And, like, it's got me leave. Like, I feel, like, a little weird walking out of it. Which I will say, like, that's not necessarily an insult. Because I think that the way I like to judge film and television is, did the thing make me feel the way it was supposed to make me feel? And I think it did.
Yeah, I think you're supposed to feel weird. Like, a lot of people I've seen are like, I don't know, I feel kind of mixed up about the whole thing. And I'm just looking at them being like, I think that's the point. Like, I don't think you're supposed to feel one way or the other coming out of the show or the game.
No, like, you kind of see in Joel's face, like, he kind of shuts off as he does it.
Yeah, and well, I have a couple points on that as well. But Jen, I do want to talk about, you haven't played the first game. You did play the second, so I assume you had some inklings this was going to happen. But feelings on that.
I kind of had some idea, obviously, and the plot point I'm sure is coming in the next season. So I think it was good. I'm kind of excited to see Ellie as she gets older, because in part two she's 19 as opposed to what, 14 and 15?
Yeah. And there's definitely news on the season two front. They very quickly after the episode dropped, they revealed a lot of little nuggets about what potentially could happen with part two and what their plans are for that. But I think I want to dive into this. Because I'm obsessed with this show and I'm obsessed with this episode and I'm obsessed with, they can do no wrong to my eyes. So you don't need to hear me blabber on about that. But let's talk about it. Let's dive right in. And I do want to just jump right into, man, the Anna flashbacks. That's what we'll start off. And this is Anna, Ellie's mom, played by, and you can already hear I'm going to start gushing, because it's played by Ashley Johnson, who, if people know me, have listened to the podcast, big Critical Role fan. I'm a big fan of anything Ashley Johnson does. So seeing her as the original voice of Ellie and also in this role, oomph, it hit. Like the minute she's grunting in the woods, I felt it. That was Ellie. That's my Ellie there.
Yeah, Tommy, we've talked about listening to the official Last of Us podcast. Again, this is the recap of that podcast. But here, if you guys have not checked that out, she is the guest on that episode. And just talking about how much the character means to her and like how much it meant for her to come back for this, like just so, so touching that like Ellie is her in a lot of ways. And the fact that now she gets to share that with Bella Ramsey, who has done an incredible job in the role as well. And it's like, you know, seeing her at the start of this episode, you know, you close your eyes, obviously the voice is there. That's Ellie 100%. But then you go to Bella Ramsey later and that's also Ellie. And I think that's what's so special about it. Like, it's not like, oh, here's the real one. You know, it's like, oh, this is also Ellie. And I think that's like the thing that I'm walking away from this season as a whole, feeling really good about.
Yeah, and I feel the same with Joel, you know, as Pedro's version and Troy's version. Like, I think what's so cool about this adaptation is, like, usually I feel like I prefer one version to the other in other adaptations I've seen. I love all the versions I got of the characters in both the TV show and the video game. I mean, I think Ashley Johnson, the thing that gets me is, like, I've seen hundreds of hours of her now through Critical Role, which is a lot of podcasts. And, like, they're right when they say, like, a lot of her mannerisms just are there. Like, when I think on the podcast, they mentioned the line, like, oh, tough guy or whatever, was an improv from her. Like, I've heard her say, like, that same mannerisms in her D&D characters. Like, it's like, that is just Ashley Johnson. And that line got me. The line that I want to talk about is the, you tell them, you fucking tell them. It's like, the idea that you don't have to meet your parent and you still get essences of your parent in you. Like, Ellie is her mom, even though she never met Anna. Like, she has that roughness that you, we saw just from the little bit of Anna. Jen, what did you think of this opening?
I thought it was on point casting. Like, as soon as I saw her there, yeah, the mannerisms, even how she looked, I saw Ellie 100%. Just fantastic, I thought. And I think that I enjoyed her, watching her more than I enjoyed, what's the other girl's name? Anna, I think. No, not Anna. But the other girl whose flashback it was there, I didn't really care for her part as much as I cared for Anna's part with giving birth.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing. And like so much of what The Last of Us captures is, you know, the idea of nature versus nurture, right? And typically in The Last of Us, we've only gotten the nurture part of growing up, right? Like, Ellie is so much formed by her environment. And this is our first time really getting to see, like, what is the nature part of her? Where does that come from? And I don't, kind of, like, I hope there's, like, more flashback. Like, I don't know, can they do, like, can they go further back and, you know, or, yeah, I don't know. Can we see more of Anna at some point?
Yeah, just a whole spinoff of just Anna, because, yeah, like, I just adore the character, even just a little bit. Like, there's so much packed into the, like, everything. Every way she says certain things, the way she talks to Marlene later on, there's a story there. there's history there, and you get that from just the little bit we get here. I do think one of the big things that came out of this is like confirmation, like at least to me, like how Ellie is immune, which is the fact that Anna was bit before giving birth, and so the cordyceps ended up seeing her as an ally, and so grew with her. I think it's interesting.
Yeah.
If we know,
to be more exploration though, for sure.
Yeah, and like I don't know, not to sound morbid, but like, wouldn't we just like go have a bunch of pregnant women go get infected and then give birth, and then we if that's the solution, or is the idea like it's a combination of that and Ellie's DNA just happened to be the perfect storm?
The way you said that, it sounded like let's tender to the slash, like let's just lead women to the slaughter.
Tommy, oh no, not this genocide.
Listen, in this world, they're taking a little girl and just forcing her to go through surgery without asking about it. I don't think it's past them that they would get a bunch of pregnant women and be like, all right, here you go. It's your sacrifice is to the greater good of humanity.
The one issue with that, though, is you'd only get one birth, and that would be a long time. Like, what, 16 plus years before that women could give, if they gave birth to all women, could give birth again. That's a not very good population odds.
Well, and that comes to the idea of too, of like how long does it need to mature inside you to then become able to be a cure? Like, are they prematurely killing Ellie before? Like, that's why there should be more tests. We'll talk about that with the hospital scene. Mm-hmm. But it's like it's huge guesses they're making on this stuff because it is untapped territory.
Yeah, I've got a bigger gripe here, and I don't know if this is skipping ahead, it's in the same scene, but you know, Marlene's there, and Marlene goes in to kill Anna, right? And the guy holding Ellie, he knows that Marlene's going in there to shoot her, but he doesn't cover the baby's ears at all. I was so sad about that. I was like, and I don't know if that was like a creative choice to like, you know, one of the first things Ellie hears is a gunshot, and then therefore later on she's like obsessed with guns, you know. Is that like something that was instilled in her in her first moments? I don't know, it's something to think about.
Yeah, where is she, was she getting formula that with her mom dad? Like I'm just trying to think about it. Or did they have wet nurses? Like I don't know.
Yeah, because that's she was specifically like, I didn't want to feed her because I got infected. Yeah, I don't know off that. But I think with the gunshot, and the thing too is like Marlene also I think specifically said like make sure she doesn't hear. And then yep. The guy specifically doesn't cover the ears. This guy should be fired.
Not a great babysitter.
No. Don't call him Michael.
Yeah, I cover your baby's ears, Michael. Yeah.
I would have walked out of the building too.
Yeah, like get the baby out of there. Oh, there's so many solutions.
And Marlene was really aggressive about it, kind of on the fence at first, but like Marlene made the decision in her mind that she was going to kill Anna, and she went in there and she didn't say goodbye. She just pop. I was like, dang girl, what the heck?
See, but I like that. Because at first she said, I can't do it. She walked out, and the only way she was going to be able to do it was do it quickly and not think about it. Because, like, I think that says more about Marlene's character, which is she is emotional, but she has shut that side off of her, and she has to. It's the only way she can, like, for her, it's the only way she survives in this world. Like, even, like, you know, and they talk about it again on the podcast, but I was already thinking of it as, like, Marlene with, like, Anna doesn't ask Marlene to take care of Ellie. It's, like, find someone, because Marlene is not that person. She is not a motherly figure. She is not, that is not her goal in life. Her ambitions does not involve this. And so like, I think all of this really sets up Marlene for like the choices later on in the episode, because as emotional as she is, as caring as she is, and as much as she loves Anna, there's a bigger purpose for Marlene.
Well said.
Yeah, that's the Anna flashback. Just again, we could go on about this for so long, and I think it's just a kudos to the series of like all the new stuff they've added in. Obviously, this was like hinted towards in the game, but it's new. Was just bangers. Like, I don't think there's a new thing in the show that I was like, no, that didn't hit for me. And so yeah, just great stuff here. But that does lead us to man, some rough stuff, because Ellie is definitely not okay. And we get Ellie and Joel having some conversations. Like we were saying, Joel is trying hard. And we can talk about that in the conversations there. And then it all culminates into the scene with the dress, which is straight out of the video games. It's a big scene.
Okay, so I was shocked to find out that the giraffe was not CGI. Is that, like, I don't know what that says about me or the show or any, like, I'm not making a judgment on that. I'm just saying I looked at the giraffe, I said, okay, that's CGI. And then I found out later it's a real giraffe.
Yeah, they were from the Calgary Zoo.
Yeah, I feel like they did some, like, doctoring, because I definitely felt the same. Like, I knew, I could tell it was real, because also I just had a feeling that, like, they knew their... Like, when this scene, if you are in the industry, you see this scene, you know people are going to be so critical on making sure that it's not CGI. And so I knew they would at least try to attempt to do real. But it definitely looked, like, I see what you're saying, Michael. Like, I don't know if it's the blue screen that they use to get the background with it.
That could be it, honestly.
Yeah.
I thought it was CGI initially until they actually showed Ellie feeding the giraffe. Because of how, like, the tongue moved and everything, it was too intricate, I think, for where we're at for CGI. So I knew for that particular scene, at least, she was feeding the giraffe, actually.
Yeah, which is, I mean, again, cool scene. But we get there from a very, like, Ellie's ignoring Joel. And not in, like, an intentional way. I think Ellie's just, like, she's not the same girl anymore. Like, this is a huge traumatic thing happened to her. And I think, like, the other thing is, like, her and Joel don't open up, or at least, like, at this point, Joel hasn't taught her to open up. Like, he, every time she asks about his life, he shuts down.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you see, yeah, you see how he goes to her with, like, material things, right? Like, he doesn't jump to, like, the feelings or emotions. Like, you know, it's Boggle, it's guitar, you know, like, that's how he knows to connect with somebody, which, you know, I think that's a thing, you know. Call it toxic masculinity or just masculinity in general, where, like, there's so much instilled in you to, like, just hide emotion that, like, that's how you relate to people. And I can relate to that as well, because here I am on a podcast not talking about my feelings and instead just talking about TV shows. So,
I mean, he did try to make her laugh. He told her they're going to use dynamite.
He was really trying. And that's the thing is, like, it also, like, but it does match Joel's. And some people I heard is, like, this felt like a completely different Joel than we've seen. And I'm like, sure, like, he's more lighthearted, but I think he sees that she's hurting. And but it does match the Joel of, like, Joel needs to fix everything. Joel can't help himself. Like, he can't help when things are wrong. He has to fix it. And so in this moment, it's like almost he's over. It's like when, You want to talk to someone, but they're not texting you back, and you keep texting because you're like, I can fix this. Like, that's Joel in this moment. He's like sending her text message after text message, like, just respond. We can fix this together.
Yeah. And back to the dynamite thing, I thought it was interesting because I didn't realize he was joking at first, because that is, like, such a TV. Like, I think back to, you know, The Walking Dead or Lost, where, like, that's something that would have, like, actually has happened, where, like, oh, we just happened to find dynamite. So when he said that, I was like, oh, that's just such a TV thing. It's like, no, of course I didn't find dynamite. That would be weird.
Yeah, like, the show hasn't done a weird thing. Like, oh, using dynamite on this would be preposterous, even though we've done the weirdest.
I just don't think you see dynamite every day.
Yeah. But we did see the ladder. They did the classic climb up and get the ladder and throw it down scene, which for video game players, you have to do that a ton.
How many of those moments have we gotten? Can we recap on that? Like Ooh. Straight video game? Like, I know, like, I think the first one we clocked was when, like, you know, he bends down to open the backpack, you know, like little game elements.
Flashlights.
Like,
when she dropped down into that cellar type thing. And you see she puts the garbage can out because that's how she would climb up in the game. And finds the batteries, or was it, like, medicine or something? She found something on the shelf.
Yeah. I think the only things I wanted to see that I did it from the games, because I actually thought we'd see more, to be honest, Michael. I thought we'd see more. I wanted to see a more specific workbench. Like, I wanted to see that iconic workbench. We got something vaguely like it, but I wanted it, you know? I wanted that moment.
I wanted nail bombs.
Yeah.
Where were the nails? I guess that's like not technically practical. Like it seems way harder to actually make than.
I just wanted Motel cocktails.
Yeah. Or the bow and arrow. There's so many. Yeah.
We'll wait for season two on this.
Yeah. It'll come. It has to, right? But this does lead to eventually we see that like Ellie's going to be okay. She's going to get through this. There's still, you know, she has changed. This is how I feel about it, is Ellie has changed, period. Like, that can't be undone. You can't undo that. But the same Ellie is still in there, just a new version. And life will go on. Things will go on. It will be okay. But it is different, and that's also okay. Things can be different, and we don't need to. I think sometimes as humans, we always want to fix everything. We want to go back to the way it was, but sometimes you just can't, and that's also okay.
Well said.
But I love this. The draft was great. Straight out of the video game, something that I was obsessed with. And like, could you imagine? Aim for her, like, she's never seen a giraffe before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Supposedly when the Europeans came back from Africa and described the giraffe to other people, they thought that they were insane. Because when you think about it, like, a giraffe is such a weird looking creature.
Yeah, no, that was Tommy. Like you said, if I saw a giraffe right net, like I walked outside, there's a giraffe. Like I'm losing my mind.
I'd be and so like excited.
This, I've seen a giraffe. I've been to the zoo. I know what giraffes look like.
Why? Have you fed a giraffe before?
I have not.
Yeah, I think that'd be fun as long as the tongue's not getting all up in my fingers. Like,
yeah,
less tongue action, and then I'd be cool with the giraffe.
Mm-hmm. When I found out that they were actually giraffes from the Calgary Zoo, they had a little advertisement that said, "You can go feed the giraffes after dark."
That was my next question. They're totally gonna like, this is the giraffe from The Last of Us. They're gonna like exploit this little giraffe.
Calgary's gonna exploit everything. Oh, come to the mall where right? Yeah. This like everything's gonna be Last of Us now.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's our biggest thing we've ever found in Alberta. It's going to be talked about for 50 years.
Go ahead, Tommy.
Would you guys do the Last of Us tour? Would you start in Boston, do the entire experience, then go stop in Calgary, do all those locations, do the whole thing?
It would take you a long time to do the Alberta ones. It's like 8 hours to get to Grand Prairie alone.
Yeah, I don't know that that's my thing.
I don't know. I think when your daughter is old enough, I think you should just do this. Just go out. It could be wild.
So this is off topic, but are you guys aware of the Breaking Bad house?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I've talked about this before.
They're angry, right? They don't like that people come.
Yeah,
and
there's
all.
She's like always on her lawn. Like, it's a TikTok thing. Like, everyone goes to the Breaking Bad house, and like the woman there, she's built a fence around her house, and she's always sitting on her lawn, and she's like cussing at the kids that are filming her house. She's like, "Yeah, you're not Walter White. Go away. You're not cool. Stop filming me." It's kind of sad, but also funny.
Yeah,
she's probably playing into a bit too.
I think so. Yeah, it sell the house. You could make like whatever, like five times the market value because it's the Breaking Bad house. I would imagine so
easily.
Or sell like, yeah, take a selfie with the house. Give me $5. Or hey, you want to throw a pizza on my house? $10. You know. Like,
if you want to teepee it, it's $150.
Yeah,
exactly.
Plus, you have to clean it up.
The last thing I just want to mention in this scene before we transition to in the hospital is. Joel opens up, and we got in episode 3, he mentioned that that someone shot at him and missed, and that's why he has the ear problems and the scar. We get confirmation that was actually Joel who did try to commit suicide after Sarah because he just didn't feel like his life could go on. And then we get the moment of like, yeah, because time heals all wounds, and he says, no, it wasn't time that healed this. Oof, big feels here.
Yeah. Tommy, it's weird because, like, we actually got a lot of answers of, like, questions we've been asking throughout, like, how did this happen? You know, it's like, they didn't even necessarily need them answered, per se, but, like, you know, coming from, you know, the MCU shows where, like, sometimes we just have questions that never get answered or never will be answered, it's nice that this kind of stuff gets addressed. And, again, it's, like, such a small element that you wouldn't really think about, but, you know, we're podcasting about it, so we think about it.
Yeah, and the game doesn't even, like, I think the other thing is the game doesn't address most of this stuff. It's very matter of fact. Like, they'll throw things in notes and stuff, and then no one ever discusses it in game. No one talks about it. You as the audience slash player knows that these things are out in the lore of the game, but, like, it's never addressed like the TV show is, and I think that's so brilliant of them to do it. Be like, okay, we know you don't need these answers or want them. We're going to give them to you now because we have the space, we have the time to do this.
Yes.
It brings a lot more depth to the characters too.
For sure.
Yeah, and it lines up with Joel's character of like, we saw him after with Sarah. Like, he did not seem okay right when when Sarah was dying in his arms. It's tragic. Mm-hmm. But that does cut to they do find the Fireflies, or I guess the Fireflies find them and aggressively take them to the hospital. So they do achieve their goal. They get to the hospital, guys. We get Joel waking up in a big old conversation by Marlene. Jen, like you said, you saw this coming. What did you think about this? What were your takeaways?
Well, we skipped over this bit, but I liked how Joel finally asked Ellie if she actually wanted to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
And she's like, I felt that was the first time we actually saw any interest, and she kind of was like, I mean, I guess. So, and then when Joel was talking to Marlene, I felt like it kind of started to explain some things, and it was kind of obvious that she was just using him this whole time as much as Ellie. It was like everyone was kind of disposable more or less to her because she shut herself off so much.
Yeah, and I think one of the themes of the show is that, like, everyone has their own agenda, everyone has their own motivation, everyone has their own things, and I think a lot of people have blinders on, and I think yeah, and even Ellie, like, I think Ellie, you talk about that scene, like, I think Ellie thinks the cure is her comeuppance. In a way, like, she talks about it a little bit at the end, is, like, the survivor guilt. A lot of people have lost their lives for Ellie. And I think in her mind, if she doesn't give back in some way, she's let down all those people. And so it's like, she's not doing it for the world. She's, again, doing it for her people. She's doing it for love. It's not, and no one's doing it for this grand old humanity. Woohoo! It's your people, your found family is who you're going to care about.
And some of the people that she's feeling guilt over them dying really had nothing, they weren't her fault at all. You just see the kind of person Ellie is with how much it's hurting her and weighing on her all the time.
I want to get you guys' take on this because, you know, it's just like in the game, it's kind of presented in a vague way, and I feel like it's almost up to everyone's discretion, and I feel like that's probably the point, where they don't necessarily say outright that if they do this, that, like, Marlene, when she's explaining it, going into surgery, Marlene never says, like, this, like, straightforward, like, this is going to solve everything, you know, this is 100% going to work, we know it is. What was you guys' read on that? Like, did you think that, yes, these scientists had it all figured out, they were definitely going to solve humanity, or was it like, yeah, it might work, but we don't know for sure until it happens?
In the game, I felt more like this isn't even a guarantee, but it's a really big possibility that it will work, and they're willing to risk that. In the TV show, I personally felt a little bit like it was a little bit more like, yeah, we're, like, pretty confident this is, like, maybe not 100%, but, like, we're more on the side it's going to work than I felt in the game.
I personally felt like it wasn't going to work. Like, I felt like it was just a big unknown, and they thought, what's one life for the life of many if this does work? Like, it was just a big experiment for them kind of thing.
Somebody much smarter than me on TikTok had laid this out, but kind of explaining how this could never work. You know, some of it's like, you know, TV magic a little bit, but the fact that there has never been any sort of vaccine for fungal infections, like the fact, like, and if we don't have that now in 2023, there's no chance they had it in, what was it, like 2003 medicine, right? Like their knowledge base and everything that they have to go on is so dated. Like there was no chance that this was ever going to work. And again, like, you know, if it did work, I'm like, it's a TV show. Who cares? But, you know, it's something to think about.
Do they treat fungal infections with antibiotics then?
I mean, if it's me, we've already discussed I'm allergic to penicillin, so.
That's true.
Yeah, you gotta find something else. but I will say I like the version where it doesn't, where it's like not confirmed. Because I think in the game, they show that there were other people they experimented on. Not that there were people like Ellie, but there were people close to it. Or, you know, they talk about some people, it may take them months, but eventually everyone always turned. And so I personally like the idea that it's not conclusive because I think it makes Joel's decision a little more justified. That being said, I don't think it needs to be justified, and we'll talk into that, but I think it does give a little bit more of like, well, if it's not guaranteed, but I think the bigger thing of this is like, no one is talking to Ellie. No one is asking what Ellie wants. And I do think we know what Ellie would choose, and I think Joel does, because I think there's a moment where he shows that, but Marlene doesn't care. No one cares about Ellie as anything more than a tool. Joel to for love and Marlene for this potential of a cure, which is like kind of messed up.
It kind of reminded me of a lot of other like YA dystopians in that sense too. Like in The Maze Runner, when they basically are like, oh yeah, we can force you to do the same thing, or The Hunger Games, Katniss is a tool. I feel like that's usually in post-apocalyptic or dystopian. The main character is always the tool.
Yeah. And don't ever call Ellie a tool again, okay?
Yeah.
No. I do want to speak on this because, like, I feel like as the resident parent here, I feel like I have some insight. And I raised the question, you know, whether or not they had an actual solution. And I think the point is, and I've actually thought about this a lot since it's happened. And I think the fact of the matter is, and maybe I'm the bad guy here, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to Joel, and I don't think it would matter to me. When my children were born, like, I took a mental oath where I was like, I will do anything to protect this person. And, like, that is my purpose in life. That is everything that I have to go on. It's every motivation, every decision I make, me going to work every day. Like, it's all about the kids at the end of the day. And that's just all that matters to parents, to people that have that capacity of love. And like, it doesn't matter. I will fuck the world to save my kids, straight up. I'll just say it.
Yeah. And I think the show also like doubled down on that, what you're exactly saying. And I think they know that that's how parents feel. And I think the show showed that with you get Henry giving they keep beating it throughout. If you go back and watch, and we talked about it multiple times, it's like they beat that idea of like, of the question of is one person's life worth the many. Every time we got the answer of like, yeah, one person's life is more important if it's the right one person.
And that's the other thing. Sorry, I'm going on a tangent here. Good. But from Joel's perspective, he has the chance to quote unquote save the world. But in Joel's mind, Ellie is the world. That is his world. And that's the only thing that matters. And you can't take that away from him. That's it. Like his choice, his world, he's going to make his decision, and you know what, more power to him.
And I like how they showed that family isn't always just blood. Like, it doesn't matter that he didn't give birth to Ellie. That is his world. That's who he loves. It's who puts the time, who's there for you. That's your family.
Yeah. And I think this also goes to Marlene's biggest mistake, and the reason this all failed for her in Fireflies is she thought this was still old Joel. She thought this was the Joel from Boston that she dealt with, because the old Joel would have walked away. We saw him just throw a body in the fire and not care. He would have walked away, but this isn't the same Joel. This is his kid now, and that's a whole different Joel. We've seen what he does for family, and I think if she would have realized that, maybe she doesn't let him walk free, because that was her fatal mistake, was letting him just go. Even after he says, like, I'm not letting you do this, do you really think Joel, like, regardless of if it's old Joel or not, he's telling you he doesn't want her to be taken. But I did like Marlene's silent tear here, because I think this is hard for her. I think that's a big point that's not getting missed. It's like, Marlene's this heartless person. It's like, this is hard. She just thinks it's the right decision, regardless of if it's hard on her emotionally.
She looked like she was trying to do it for the greater good.
So here's my question. Did Marlene always know it was going to come to this? Because that's my thought, is maybe she had a longer time to process this decision. Joel is in the moment here. It's like, it's do or die. And he's got to do something right now. Marlene, whereas I don't know how long Joel was knocked out for, but at the very least, you know, let's say she had an hour to think about it, you know, she had more time to process it. Obviously she's not as close to Ellie as Joel is, but there's still that connective tissue, emotional bond there a little bit, from being there for her birth. So I don't know. I feel like she's had a lot more time to accept what needs to happen. I think,
I think she probably suspected things like this since Ellie was born. So she probably just never let herself get attached.
And to that point, I think Marlene had inklings that she was always infected. Didn't get confirmed to the bite. I think the doctor, she always had inklings, right? I don't think she got it confirmed to the doctor. I do think part two answers some of this, and so I won't dive into what I think based on that, because I think I have a clear answer, but we're not trying to spoil people, so we won't dive into that. But I do think there's more to that, is all I'll say.
Fair.
But this leads us to, a big section. Looks way easier than it took me in the game, Michael. Do you know how many times I died during this scene?
Yeah, this is the constant problem with The Last of Us. It feels like they're brushing past things so quickly. Because we've spent 45 minutes trying to beat one level. So
we get the Joel rampage. He goes on a killing spree. He kills the doctor and gets Ellie back. I just want to say, I love that they made this more, like you said, Michael, and it's exactly how I felt, this desensitizedness, almost like Joel went into autopilot mode. They pumped the music up. You don't even hear the bullet, like the gun noise. And I think that's intentional, because it feels like Joel's not even aware of his actions until Marlene's like, hey, what would Ellie want? And then it's like you see it in his face. He breaks and he realizes this was his decision. Ellie probably would have chose to go through with it. And this was just based on his fear, his selfishness. And I love that they made this more like, as much as I think it should have been more difficult, I do like that it was this like almost like he wasn't even in his body in this moment.
Yeah, again, just very dark and like, I don't even know if dark's the right word. It's just very plain. It's very matter of fact the way it's presented to us. The music is, and again, the sound, like the cancellation of sound and the music. It's very calm the way it happens. And he's almost, yeah, it's just in his programming to do this. And that, I don't know. There's something, and here's, I think they talked about this on the podcast, but I think the great thing about Joel as a character and the complications of Joel and, you know, I guess you could argue the issues with Joel is the fact that he's not necessarily like on SEAL Team 6 here. He's not John Wick, right? He just has the capacity to be more calm in these situations, right? And I was thinking about this in the moment where I'm like, I mean, this guy's literally running to his death. These guys have like assault rifles, many of them, and he's just plowing through them. And it's not that, again, he's not like some great trained assassin. He's just a guy that has to do what he needs to do, and he's able to remain calm. And in that situation, what, 99% of people are not going to be calm. And that's the power that he has over everyone else.
And he cares more. He cares more than those other people. This is a bigger thing for him. And like his life didn't matter. Like, I think it's the perfect combination. And we've seen him in less dire situations, but in more pain, more like maybe he'll die. I never felt like he was going to die in this moment. And it's probably the most the most intense enemies he had, but it's because he was literally just a beast out of, you know, his parental instinct kicked in, and there was no one going to stop Joel in this moment.
I think the way they presented it made it, for me, more emotional, because I could just see, yeah, he was doing this to save Ellie, but because he shut himself off, he's going to have to deal with it later. And just thinking about how it's going to affect him emotionally going forward, I think is what made it harder for me to watch.
Yeah.
And I think that's the great thing about The Last of Us is like these decisions not only like externally affect you, but internally as well. Like, again, I talk about, I mentioned John Wick. I'll use John Wick as an example. He'll kill 45 people in a movie and like he's just going to the next movie and he's fine. Like, this stuff stays with you and it affects you greatly. And I think we've seen it affect Ellie, and I think we'll continue to see it affect Ellie. And clearly it's affected Joel. So much so that like killing is like, I mean, there's been so much talk with Tommy in their past. Like, it's, this is what they do, you know? And like the fact that he's that desensitized to it, it says a lot. And I think it'll continue to, I think it's going to inform a lot of things to come.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. And like, we've talked about this monster inside of Joel for so long, and it's like, we see it. Like, this monster is brutal, and this monster is unforgiving. And he'll do anything to survive with his, again, he'll protect his family, he'll protect his cubs. We've, like, to anyone that's, like, surprised by this action, it's like, it shouldn't be surprising. We've seen all the signs that Joel would do this throughout the entire season. But I digress. But the doctor dies wearing some hiking shoes in the weird how he's wearing hiking boots in the surgery room. That's weird. Just wanted to mention that.
What do you
I
guys
didn't even
think?
Notice.
Yeah, I don't know. Tommy's really on the what are those game.
Well, I have, because again, it's all part two stuff, but just I'm giving as much small things. But also a fun thing here, one of the nurses is Laura Bailey, who is the voice of a part two character. Interesting is all I got to say. She also did voice the nurse in the first game as well, which is also fun that they gave her that part. But
what do you guys think about, again, I kind of joked about it at the start, but Joel's decision to spare some of the unarmed nurses? Because here's the thing, later we get to Marlene, and he's like, you're going to come after Ellie. I know this. You're done. He doesn't know these people. I don't know. I don't know. That might be the weirdest part of the episode. Like, you've gone through all of this. You've killed people that have their hands up, right? And you spare the nurses? You don't know them. They might come after Ellie, too.
I think nurses aren't as disposable, though. And usually in war times, there's rules that you can't kill nurses.
Oh, okay. I didn't consider that, but yeah.
So I wonder if that was the mindset there, too.
And I think in the game he was going to spare the doctor too, but the doctor grabs a knife, and so he has no option. But I agree with you that the logic is a little like, what, you killed everyone else. Why these people? But I do like the homage, at least for me, that's how I read it, of in the game, this is the one, in this scene, you have to kill everyone. And the one choice you get to make is if you kill the nurses or not. It's like you could either shoot them and nothing happens. It doesn't affect the game whatsoever. You can either shoot them or you can leave them there in the room. And I think that's the funniest thing to me. It always made me laugh that like you got that. Like I knew every time I made sure I saved the nurses. Cause I'm like, this is my one thing I could do that Joel can't force me to do here. I'm going to stick it to you, Joel. And so I like that as much as maybe the sense of it doesn't make sense.
Fair. I think that's just like, for me, it's like, for better or for worse, for right or for wrong, no matter how you feel about it, Joel did become a monster in this situation. And I think that's a bit of my hang up. It's like, you know, Godzilla doesn't stop, you know, tearing up New York City because there's a special building. I don't know.
He would always stop for the little kids dancing.
Okay, fair. Just do a little jig and Joel will be on his merry way.
Yeah, you didn't see the nurses dancing in the back.
Okay, fair point. I can't argue with that, actually.
Well, someone he doesn't spare is Marlene. And this is our last little section. We'll talk about the Marlene conversation, the inevitable death, and all the lying that he does to Ellie later on. Again, I thought just all the kudos to Pedro and Bella and all these scenes. Man, Marlene, do you think Marlene was going to let Joel, like when she's like, oh, we can still fix this it's okay. This is what you don't think believe in Marlene there, right?
You know what? Actually, I give Marlene like 70-30 here. I think 70-30, I think 70 Marlene is gonna walk away. I think Marlene wants to live. There's nothing in the show that makes me think that Marlene is willing to die for everybody, you know. With that being said, there is the 30, and that's all that matters to Joel. He's gonna kill you over that 30.
I didn't think she was just gonna walk away. I thought that'd be too easy.
And I think that's the thing, is like any percent of maybe she won't is enough for anyone, because it's like in this world we've seen how powerful revenge can be, and Kathleen is the great example of like, literally, she hunted for 10 days for one guy because of her brother. Like, yeah, like, people will do gnarly things. And so I do think it's like, regardless of the amount, if Marlene was telling the truth, if she wasn't, in this moment, I'm kind of with Joel here. You have to kill her.
Yeah.
You've gone this far, buddy. Might as well. I mean, you spared the nurses, but this one's definitely yes. She's way less harmless than the nurses were. Like, I know the nurses like turned around and everything, but this person's bleeding on the ground, half dead. Yeah, just leave her alone.
I don't know if the nurses are that dangerous though, because nurses don't always have that much power.
I know I like keep roasting the nurses. I'm not trying to.
Yeah, you really are anti-nurses on this podcast, Michael.
Kill
yeah.
the nurses. What's the deal? I'm just kidding.
But if you could spare someone, I guess it would be the nurses. Like, it's like anyone you could spare.
It would be a medical personnel.
Not your friend Marlene?
He knows how deadly she can be.
You think she's
going
to nurse me back to health? No, but a nurse will. Who's going to clean up my vomit? A nurse.
Change my diaper, nurses.
Anything from you guys about this Marlene conversation? Anything you guys picked up? I think I mentioned before the Ellie, like when she asked about what would Ellie have done? I read it as like Joel realized like Ellie probably would have took the surgery, but you know, I don't know if you guys felt different or.
Much like most things with Joel, I don't think it matters. In his mind, I don't think it matters what she would have done. Like I see the read where, like, yeah, it kind of registers to him, but, like, I don't think it ever affected any choice he made. Ever.
Agreed. I think it's, like, even if it did read, it doesn't matter. A, it's done, and B, like, he probably still would have done it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt the same way. Like, yeah, he thought about it for a minute, but it's not going to change anything.
Yeah, and that's the Marlene we get. We get a cut, and then we get to Ellie. They're in the truck. And she's asking about what happened. And this is the first of Joel's doubling down, but Joel lies to her that everything, you know, scavengers attack. That's why she's not, doesn't have her clothes. And they gave up on giving a cure long ago. There's nothing we can do. Don't worry about it.
No, I don't think his excuses were bad, but maybe the delivery, like, I don't know. It was kind of obvious that he was lying. Like, it's a very specific situation for her to just conveniently miss all of that. I think I'm with Ellie here. I'd be a little sus.
Yeah, she didn't buy it for 1 minute.
No, but again, and like I know the podcast talked about, this is the one that I actually had before, I swear, was the connection between Anna's lying at the beginning and Joel's lying here, and how they're both lying to save Ellie in some form, and how both in those situations, Marlene in the first situation and Ellie in this situation, have an inkling they're probably lying, but are willing to buy into the lie. And I think that's played so well. I love the connection there, and I am with you guys. I don't think Ellie bought it for a minute. I think she knows Joel. She's been on this journey with Joel. You think that, like, and I think she, to a point, had an idea that this might be a sacrifice mission. I don't think Ellie didn't have that idea. So maybe Joel didn't, but I think Ellie thought that she might not make it out of this.
I think that's part of a lot of her issues on the start of the episode where, you know, yes, she went through a very traumatic event, but now she's, you know, inching closer to the hospital and she kind of brushes it off like it's not a big deal, but it's a very heavy thing to happen to her. She is like been told that she's the most important person on the planet, and you know, good, bad, or indifferent, it's gonna be a tricky situation.
It's a lot of weight to put on a 14-year-old for sure.
Yeah. And she's still thinking about it because they get close to Tommy's location and she basically opens up to him completely and is like, listen, I don't know if she says specific, I don't remember exactly what she says, I don't care. But she's like, just tell me what, like, is what you told me for real? And he says, yes, it is. I'm telling you the truth. And we cut to black. I believe for the first time, I believe every episode, I saw this somewhere, every episode before this was a fade to black. And this is our first cut to black at the end of an episode. And also our first time they're like kind of settled. I think every other time they're always walking off. I think I saw somewhere. Which again, just small choices that are just brilliant that don't need to be in there, but just help and just are great and incredible.
I liked how Joel talks so much about Sarah too. And he's like, oh, I think you'd really like Sarah and she'd like you because you're funny. And you know, she had a great smile, but you have a good smile too. I thought it was really cute seeing him finally really start to open up and start to process all that heaviness and grief he's had with Sarah.
Yeah, no, and that's I think this is, you know, at the time I would have said this playing the video game, this is like one of the greatest endings to any show ever. And Tommy, I think you laid it out well. It's all about the choices. And this is a rant I know I've had on the podcast before, but characters are all about the choices and it informs so much about the people. And while he made the choice to go through the hospital massacring everybody, he's also making the choice to continue to protect her by saying, I promise that I did not. That's exactly the way I laid it out, was exactly how it happened. And I think that choice, again, just is the final nail in the coffin to tell you everything you need to know about Joel.
That's interesting. You read it as I definitely think there's a protection there. I am curious if you read any of, like, I saw it as a big fear from Joel. At this point, she has to double down because he's so afraid to lose her. There may be a chance that she is telling the truth, that she'll be okay with him telling her the truth here. But, like, I don't know. I guess it's a combination of fear, but I think there is a little bit of, like, why the action's already done. Why maybe she can live a carefree life without feeling guilty about not being the cure. I don't know. There's definitely a lot of emotions.
That's the thing. It's like it is – he says, I promise. And those two words inform so much. It's all of the things you just laid out. It's number one, I don't want you to hurt that we lost the chance to do this great thing. It's, I don't want you to hate me because I love you. It's, I don't want you to hate me because I know I am the most equipped person to protect you. Like, there's so much that goes into those two words. And I think that's the great thing about The Last of Us is they can capture so many different emotions and motivations in one line of dialogue.
Plus, she's talking about how she feels so much guilt already for all these people that weren't even her fault. If she found out Joel killed that many people, she would be thinking that's her fault too, even if it wasn't.
Well said.
Yeah, I think the only, we'll wrap up and talk about the season as a whole. The thing that I know people are talking about is, like, some people don't love this decision. Some people didn't love it 13 years ago. Welcome to the club. People didn't love it when the game came out. But I think for me, why it always worked for me is, like, in any TV show, I don't agree with half the things the characters do. I'm a different person. I have different life experiences. I have a different whole view on life. But what I always go to is, did the show set up and explain that character's choices? Can I sit and point at things and be like, this is why they ended up making that choice? Even if it's based on lies, even if it's based on whatever, but there, I can see the connections, the connective tissue there. And I think this show did it. I think the game already did it, and I think the show just magnified the points that the game was trying to make, made it very clear that this was always inevitable. I think when we go back and watch this, we'll see even more points that showcase that. And I just – all the kudos to all the team that worked on this.
Yep.
Well, let's start off. Jed, season one, what did you think?
Fantastic. I think this is one of the best seasons of a TV show I've seen. Just all the action, all the characters. And honestly, my favorite scenes were just Ellie and Joel just hanging out. as she's telling jokes and whatnot. They just played off each other so well. Just the casting was phenomenal for the show.
And Michael.
This show just captured so much of everything I wanted and more. I think I can go on record and say I like the show more than the game now. I feel like they tweaked the right amount of things to improve upon what the game had. My favorite parts of the show is when they diverged from the game storyline. The Bill and Frank episode, number one. It's got to be my favorite episode of the
season. I was going to ask, yeah, what was your favorite Bill and Frank?
Actually, that one or the one with the cannibals. I think those are neck and neck in my mind. And that one is pretty similar to the game. But even in this episode where, like, you know, I kind of came out like, okay, everything happened that I kind of expected. But still, some of my favorite things were, like, just the slight tweaks that they made along the way. The Anna flashback. I thought that was one of the highlights of the episode. It informed so much. It kind of explained things that we weren't sure of. And I think that's the best thing you can get from an adaptation. Give us the original heart and just improve upon it a little bit. I think many people would have said The Last of Us Game 1 is a perfect game, myself included. But they still were able to look at the very minute details of the game and just tweak it a little bit and make it a little bit better. And it was all for the better. And I'm so excited for what they have left in store for us and future seasons. And I'm giddy about it. I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, well said. Jen, I didn't ask you the episodes. Any episode that stuck out to you as, like, now thinking back, what was your favorite?
The mall episode. I just really liked getting Ellie's backstory and seeing her lighter and seeing her first crush. I thought it was really cute.
Yeah, I think those are all great choices.
The mall episode got so much hate. Actually, in hindsight, like,
I know,
like, oh, this is a boring filler episode. Well, I'm like, that was, like, so good.
I'm the unpopular opinion brigade, I guess, because I loved it.
I'm with you, Jen. I didn't mention it in my top two, but it's probably three for me. And again, like, just the fact that it's three, like, you know, it's still in the, like, everything's an S tier here, you know.
I know.
An S tier.
Even the lowest ranked episode, I would still take over almost any episode of any TV show ever. Exactly. But that's The Last of Us. Is this the last for us? Anything else you guys want to mention that we haven't?
Can we talk about Tommy? You and I texted about this a little bit, and I have thoughts, okay? Because I can't recall any actual quotes, but it's kind of what I've heard secondhand is that season one is going to be based on game one. Season two will be based on game two. Like, that's what's been in my mind this whole time. Now they're coming out and saying season two or game two is going to be split into two seasons.
I don't think he's confirming that. He said more than one is what he said.
I don't know how I feel about that because I feel like the original creative decision was to have that be one season. And I feel like we're going back on that. And I think it's just because they want, it's just the money. It's all about the money, which I get. And I'm glad to have more Last of Us. But I just want to make sure that it's the correct creative decision, that they're happy with the decision, that they have the right story to make it work. I just want to put it on the table and see what you guys think.
For me, I don't mind it. Thinking about part two, I agree that I do think it could be a little bit of money grab. But thinking about it, game one makes sense as one season. It's a shorter game. A lot of the stuff fit. There's nothing that I feel like they left out of game one playing it that I'm like, oh, you really needed another episode to tell this. I don't think they did. But with part two, I can see, and we, you know, I don't want to get into specifics, but we've talked about it. Of like, there's specific groups in part two that I think they can expand on. There's specific, I think with more seasons, they can flesh out things that I think people have issues with. So I'm hopeful that it's going to be a benefit. I'm just hoping they're making it for the right reasons, like you said. Not if the reasons are for money, then you shouldn't be doing it. But if the reasons are everything I laid out of, like, there are story moments that could use the time because it is a beefy game. Like, anyone who's played it, my friend recently played it and went, wait, it's not over yet, multiple times. And I'm like, yeah, dude, it's a long game.
I just checked it. The second is 24 hours of playtime. The first game is only 14. So that's a big, that is a pretty big play difference with just content and stuff.
So here's another element of my complaint here. I'm ready for game three, baby. Where's that? Like, I was hoping that I feel like the fact that they said, okay, we're going to do multiple seasons of game two. I'm sitting here like, oh, that means the game's not, I feel like they're pushing it off.
Maybe it's stuck with silent, with the new Silent Hill game.
Yep.
So I think I figured out Neil Druckmann. I think I know him because he loves to do these ambiguous, like, well, you know, maybe, like, he doesn't like to ever, like, give resolutes to things, but he also loves to give little nuggets. As, you know, example, the first podcast where he literally reveals the breadcrumb theory and people figured it out in, like, 2 seconds. He recently was talking about, oh, yeah, like, everyone wants a Last of Us Part 2 or Part 3, but we're already working on a game, and our whole thing is working on things that we love, and if we, I'm... you know, butchering his saying, but basically it was very ambiguous. He brings up Last of Us Part 3, doesn't deny that they're ever going to make a Part 3, but was saying they were working on another game. I think Part 3 is already being worked on. I'm calling my shot. I think Part 3 is being worked on. I think they're going to keep it as a reveal, and especially if they're not, they're going to start now. You can't tell me that they're not seeing the success of this TV show and not making another game.
I'm with you there. I think it's been in progress. I think it's a GTA 6 situation here where people didn't think it was in progress and then they had leaks and they found out that it was basically ready. I think the game is in active development, and if it's not, it's a weird financial decision, just like making game two one season.
I think it is in development, but it seems like with a lot of those longer games like that, like The Last of Us, Final Fantasy, and the new Legend of Zelda, it's taking them a long time to develop because they're trying to do way more of like an open world kind of concept and add the movie elements to it. And I think that just takes a really long time to make.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good point. And I also think, if I remember, Part 2 got a lot of strife of, like, they announced it, and it took forever for it to actually come out. And so I think, and same with Zelda, got a very similar complaint of, like, when is this coming? You already, it's almost like, don't tell people things until it's ready, because people are going to complain. They don't care that you're telling them it's happening. They want it, period. They don't care.
Give it to them in 6 months. Like, that is when you can announce it.
Yeah. Any other news from that? I think, yeah, that's what I heard mentioned during that. There was a couple other things I saw about season two. I think some that we were pretty obvious that, like, their plan is to continue with Bella as long as she wants to keep playing the character. Again, I would have been shocked otherwise. Not really too shocking there. I think we're just all excited to see where they go with that.
Final question.
Yeah.
If we're looking ahead here a little bit, I want to throw it out there. It's not a spoiler, but there's a character named Abby in season two or game two. Do you guys have fan casting in mind? I know this is like, it's a big question. Yeah, it's just a big question to throw on you guys.
Laura Bailey. Just kidding. No, I don't know.
I've got one. I think it's a long shot, but it works for me. Give me Florence Pugh.
I could see it. I think she.
It's a big star name to throw in there. But I feel like HBO has kind of been about that altogether. I think Troy Baker could have played Joel in this game, you know, but they didn't. They went for the bigger name. And if you're going for a big name, give me Florence Pugh. And maybe she has to go on that, like, MCU superhero workout routine. I don't know, because Ellie is a very buff individual. That's my pitch.
I don't hate it.
I'm putting it in stone. That's the great thing about having a podcast. I'm putting it in stone. And then when it happens, I can make a TikTok and say, I called it.
Should we do that? Should we just record like a podcast where we just state a bunch of just hypotheticals, so then someday when it happens, we can pull out the moment to be like, we called it in 2023.
Yeah, like Tommy, a broken clock is right twice a day.
Yeah.
Tommy, you've had way worse ideas for sure. That I love this. I love this.
That's a compliment or not, but I'll take it.
I'm talking baby Avengers here, baby.
Florence was in Little Women, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah, and she, I mean, Florence is popping off. She is an incredible actress, and I think the show. Man, I'm just picturing those scenes, and that would be like, it would be brutal, and I know she would kill it. Don't give me hopes up, Michael. But I think that's it for us. Anyone have any quick recommendations? I don't know. Mine's still Steven Universe. It's not going to change. I'm obsessed with it. Just go watch it, please. If you love lore, it's one of those shows that starts off funny and then it gets really deep and gets emotional. And then you start to look at yourself and be like, huh, maybe I should rethink myself. It's one of those kind of shows.
Have I talked about Sons of the Forest?
I don't think so.
I'm playing a game. It's called Sons of the Forest. It's a sequel to the game The Forest. It is a horror survival game where you crash on a deserted area and there's cannibals. And that's all I've got for you. If that sounds interesting, check it out.
You love the cannibals.
I do, apparently. I do. I don't know. I've developed a taste for them, you might say. No, check it out. It's also multiplayer. I've been playing through the game with my buddy Luke, and it's fun to play with each other. Like, and you would think that like we could be like the fact that we're together, we're playing this game. It's broad daylight. We're not actually going to get scared. But he and I have both squealed like little children playing this game. So it is definitely very scary, and it's fun to play with friends. So Sons of the Forest. That's my recommendation.
Okay, Jen.
Okay. I'm going to go with books. So I have two in mind. One is by Octavia Butler. It's called Parable of the Sower. It's another post-apocalyptic dystopian. And it kind of involves a lot of women's rights and kind of Black women as they would go through it. I have it on the shelf there somewhere. And it's pretty good. It uses the line, "Make America Great Again," in the 90s, which is interesting.
Whoa.
And there's a pandemic in it too.
And, Jen, yeah. Are you a comic book fan?
Yes.
Okay. Have you read Why the Last Man?
I read the first one. I wasn't a big fan.
Okay. It's a little dated. It's a little dated. Yeah. I'll give it that.
Jen, I think this book has been pitched to me in real life. Like, I'm like playing in my head. I'm like, I think the same, like this sounds very similar to a book that has been pitched to me before.
It's really good. I've talked to Ryan Elder about it too. He's nice. A fan of Octavia Butler. My other one is called The Last Policeman, and it's like a pre-apocalyptic book. So they found out the world's going to end. I think it's like 60 days or something. And the guy, like, he's no longer a cop, so they don't need them anymore. But he has to, like, solve these last few mysteries and find different people so that he can feel like he accomplished everything he needs to before the world ends.
We love anything with the last of in the title, if we learned anything from this.
Exactly.
I just can't wait till I learn how to read so I can take all these suggestions.
Well, don't you write comic books?
Hey, guys.
I said I can write. I can't read, okay?
If you want to sponsor the podcast, we have someone in need. Michael here doesn't know how to read. If you fund us today, we can teach Michael how to read.
And then we'll be able to finally give him book recommendations.
Yes. But all right, guys. Jen, thank you so much for joining us all season. You've been such a blast and such so fun to have on the podcast.
Thank you.
Where can people find you if they want to hear more hot takes?
On Instagram and Twitter at Jen_Hurst. I usually tweet about whatever reality TV show I'm watching. And my Instagram is mainly just books and whatever brewery I'm at.
Nice.
Jen, real quick. Yeah, sorry, Jen. I gotta ask. Yeah. You talked about reality TV. You gave me a winner pick recently. Are you caught up?
I haven't watched last night's episode, but I did see Sundays.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot of people to talk about Australian Survivor with, so I'm always very excited. Everyone, and that's my second recommendation, everyone out there. If you have not watched Australian Survivor, especially if you're a Survivor fan in general, just what are you doing?
You gotta watch it. 2017 is the best season.
Tommy, I think that's you, by the way.
How dare you people out there not watch Australian Survivor? I know, I honestly need to because U.S. I don't know, this season's been, I'm hopeful, but U.S. has not been my fave so far.
It hasn't grabbed me.
Yeah. I'm not recommending, like, Naruto, something that's, you know.
You're coming for my Naruto now? Oh my gosh.
I never seen gonna come for Death Note.
Oh. Yeah,
he's gonna come for everything. Do you want a list of all my favorite things? You can just go down the list, Michael.
That's a different podcast. We'll get to that one.
Where can people find you if they want to see you talk about all the things I hate or you hate that I like?
I'm on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Letterboxd at The Michael Arrear. I'm everywhere at The Michael Arrear. If you want to find me on LinkedIn, maybe. I don't know if that's my app, but I don't even use LinkedIn. I just know I have one. I was on a podcast recently, the Lights, Camera, Rant podcast with our buddy Lee. And that was a good time. That's where I talked about Sons of the Forest, but we talked about a lot of things, including The Mandalorian. Check that out.
You got to go back though and beat the record. I felt called out for you, Michael. You got to go back and beat the longest podcast record.
I feel bad for Lee. That's my big thing. Like I'm looking at Lee in the eyes as he thinks he's about to do a 3-hour podcast with me. And I'm like, I will spare you the 3-hour podcast. Fair. Like I have too much sympathy. I'm not a Joel going in there running and gunning. I'm like, I'm gonna let you down easy, man.
Well, Michael, I was on a podcast. It's not out yet. I recorded it yesterday at our friend's One Indescribable Podcast, our good friends Adam and Todd and Lindy. But Adam and Todd have been on this podcast, and we are covering they are done with their Crazy Ex-Girlfriend watch. They are now on Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. So we covered season 1, episode 8. It was very fun. We'll see how it turns out. A lot of shenanigans, you can imagine. So if you like hearing me talk and those guys, go over there and listen to all that shenanigans.
Beautiful.
Yeah. All right, guys. If you want to support the podcast, you can always rate and review us on iTunes and Spotify. 5 stars, preferably, and like some big reviews. Maybe we'll read them. But I to help Michael learn to read, please write some really lengthy reviews so that he can read them, and hopefully this will help in his learning.
5 small syllables words. And up.
Yeah,
exactly. Small words. That's the goal. Yeah.
And also, if you're there, hey, just please subscribe as well. Just go do that. Follow us on the Instagram and Twitter. We got merch. As always, come get some merch. Again, support the podcast as much as you can. We appreciate all you can do. And if you want to talk more to us, we talk about a bunch of things over at the Discord. Ask one of us, and you can get in to the Discord very easily. It's just like you could just send like a question mark, and I'll probably understand if you want to get into the Discord. I mean, maybe write Discord first. It would be helpful, but.
Or Discord exclamation point. Even.
Yeah, something like that. That's it for us. We'll be back covering Mandalorian. Been loving that series, so we'll be back in action over there. And in the meantime, hey, stay safe out there and play some Boggle on us.
Bye. My lung capacity isn't as good.
It's pretty good, though.
Not bad. Awesome.